Hello and welcome to the fourth episode in series two of If Not Now Then When, the podcast. I'm Rachel Hymas, the founder, and I'm also your host today. The aim of this podcast is simply to provide you with inspiration and make you feel aligned with the speaker rather than intimidated by their achievements. Casual vibes all round with a bit of positivity thrown in there just to brighten your day and to remind you that your aspirations are attainable. I'm so excited to announce that the guests this time around are Jonathan and Melissa of An Architect.
It's really important for everybody starting out now to understand the value of marketing, the value of communication and presenting everything you do to social media, because that's where your clients are. And you might be the best architect in the world, and if you haven't put that out, how on earth will anybody find you?
An Architect is a multiple award-winning architecture, interior architecture and design practice based in Dubai and London, and it was founded in 2013. They specialise in delivering bespoke projects across the Middle East, Europe, Asia and Africa. Jonathan is the founder and architect, and Melissa is the head of creative development and communications. Together they share the importance of knowing and understanding your craft and following this the best ways to market it. It's an amazing combination of passion-driven work and business savviness, and it was such an invigorating conversation to have. This series is fully supported by the amazing Menotti London. Honestly, without their ongoing support, this podcast series and toolkit would not have been possible. They've supported my aspirations, and in turn, I'm able to share the positivity, and I really hope that I'm able to inspire you further. Now, on to the podcast. So welcome to the podcast. It's so nice to have you both on the call. This is the first time I've actually done it where I've done it over Zoom, but with two people. So it's been a bit of one of those technical know-how of trying to work out how it all goes. But I'm actually drinking a English breakfast tea. What are you guys on with?
Right, it's afternoon for me now, so it's sparkling water.
That is it?
Little pop of energy and some oxygen through the water always keeps me going in the afternoons now. Coffee for the mornings.
Nice.
Yeah. I'm actually in the water myself because I don't drink coffee, and typically because I'm Serbian, we drink tea only if we're ill. So, yeah.
Oh, really?
It would mean something's wrong with me.
Really? Is that like a lemon tea or something? A herbal tea that you tend to have?
If we are ill, they just give you any kind of herbal tea to make you feel better. So I remember when I met Jonathan and it would be afternoon and he would just order a tea. My mother would ask him, is he okay? Is he fine? Is he feeling well?
Yeah. Oh my god, you know what, it's so funny. I mean, we'll obviously talk about these things a bit later on, but it's actually really interesting almost how like different cultures can kind of impact on even like from so to put it into context for everyone listening, your practice is based between Dubai and London, and you know, in terms of project styles, types, cultural differences is so interesting. And I can imagine you've probably come up against lots of different things that have kind of come your way that maybe you haven't even really thought about before. But how I normally structure this podcast is basically, for anyone new who's listening, that we have five key questions, and it's structured on the mantra of if not now then when. So the first question basically starts with if, and then we go from there. So the first question is, if you could summarize your career, how would you describe it? And I'm very aware that it's quite a large question to begin with, but I think it's really nice to kind of give a bit of an introduction into who you are and actually how you both work together and what you actually contribute to the business and kind of how it kind of began, I guess.
Yeah, maybe I'll start, because it all comes from the base of being an architecture practice. So out of the two of us, I'm actually the architect, so I'm the one that was obsessed about this from a very, very young age. I think as far as I can remember, I've always wanted to be an architect. So I actually almost structured most of my education around that goal of becoming an architect. So even at A-levels, I was doing maths, physics, art, design, everything to gear me towards going to university, even doing my sort of art A-level based on modern architecture and visiting London and particularly the office of Richard Rogers.
Nice.
I did my degree, my RIBA, which is the Institute of British Architects, in Liverpool. I then went to move to London, which was kind of my big goal, because I was obsessed about London being this metropolis,
nice.
This sort of heightened opportunity in the UK. I then
you're a Midlander like me.
Well,
I think,
I'm a Yorkshireman.
I'm
a Yorkshireman.
You're Yorkshire.
Yeah, I should be drinking tea.
I'm like East Midlands.
Yeah, so you know, I'm a Yorkshireman. So I was really obsessed about, you know, what the opportunities gave to me being in London. I worked there for a year for an interest in practice in Camden, and then I did my master's, my 2 years master's at the Bartlett School at UCL in London.
Nice.
That was a really sort of significant impact, and I think it really became, it resonated with me actually after sort of graduating and going into professionalism and career, how significant that time at the Bartlett was for me. But I'd really done this linearity. I was very much focused on becoming an architect. And as soon as I finished my master's, I specifically chose to go and work for a more boutique, small practice in London to get a really hands-on experience. And I do have gratitude for the company Project Orange that I was working for in Clerkenwell, because they did teach me a lot, because they kind of threw me into the deep end. And that sort of really helped me early on in my career to really kind of understand what I was really kind of passionate about, which is the sort of the creation in architecture.
Yeah.
And I think then it was the sort of transgression of looking at being further abroad, looking at moving abroad. And after I'd met Melitza, I mean, she traveled the world and she'll tell a little bit about that. But I was really obsessed about, well, what is life beyond the borders of the island of the UK? And got an opportunity to move to Dubai. Not really with a conscious idea of Dubai being a destination for me, just gave the opportunity to expand and then progress.
You know what, even kind of stopping you at that point, it's really, I love actually how, because a lot of people, like even for example myself, actually the reason I ended up in architecture, I loved watching TV programs about houses and design and things like that. But I actually went to a house party and I was just talking to a friend, basically, who said that there was a job going in the local architects. And I found that almost for me, it's always been, oh, I don't know what I'm going to do next. Whereas I really love actually that, you know, it's quite rare, actually, think these days that people have a really solid idea of what they want to do from the start and actually go through with it. Because actually, particularly with architecture, it's such a long degree. And I mean, I did my part one, and I just find it really interesting how you had that headspace. Was it something that you kind of, that was your goal and you knew that that's what you wanted to do? Or was it almost that you wouldn't let yourself kind of sideline? And are you usually quite sort of set when you have a goal?
I am. I'm quite driven. I'm sort of Aries, so I kind of like could go for my goals. But I think, to be honest, like architecture for me has always been a passion. And it's for me, but now it's a lifestyle. So it was just something I was so passionate about, and it's something I could see myself in. It's something that I could sort of, from a very early age, feel I could contribute in, and that I could really grow and give back in a way through, you know, whatever I was learning or whatever I was discovering through my career, be able to contribute to society. It was something I felt was valuable. Yeah. And I like the idea of sort of the professionalism, but the creativity. So with architecture, it has a duality, which is very, very kind of it's intriguing. It gives you that sort of fine balance between,
And I guess you need that when you're setting up your own business as well, which I guess we'll go into in a bit more detail.
What we was kind of saying. So when I ended up becoming into Dubai, it was almost like this new world opportunity, and it was something very different from what I actually was necessarily interested in. At that time, there's lots of large development projects that were going off, not necessarily kind of hands-on craftsmanship. So that basically, within the first 3 years of working for another company there, I started to go and fish and find young architects from different backgrounds, parts of the world that had come, and just start a bit of a social network within the kind of the, one of the restaurant cafes that was around, to try and get a dialogue going, find out history, find out people's interests, find out what people were actually discovering within this kind of new world of progressive and very kind of like rapid architecture that was happening in the Middle East. Through Pichakucha talks and through just generally kind of little competitions and art fairs and so forth. I mean, we actually did the first architectural intervention in the art fair that was actually in Dubai at the time. And that had been running for 7 years. But we kind of saw an opportunity from what we saw in London with Frieze and the Serpentine to do something in Dubai and make a kind of interjection within architecture.
Like a design network, yeah. I think that's quite interesting, because you obviously seem to kind of want to build the community, and actually even when you're moving to somewhere completely new, I mean, Dubai is very different to when I moved to London, but for me it was very much about, because I get inspired by people. And would you say that that's kind of been quite a contributing factor within your design, in terms of meeting people and understanding culture and actually sort of being able to represent that within your work?
Yeah, I think it has, but it's also, like, it's also about finding your voice. So when you're thrown into something that's unfamiliar and you need to find your definition, that's what the biggest impact of Dubai was for me personally, is that coming from London, you know, a very kind of intense architectural scene as well as an intense city in regards to the styles and the movements and the general chat and the direction that the current sort of the actual profession is going. But when going into Dubai, I actually kind of personally felt I wanted to find what was my strongest values and where could I contribute to a new part of the world or a new industry market that we could, you know, I could create. And that essentially is why I set up an architect. So we found the opportunity, we discovered the niche, the passion for craftsmanship, the passion for both the synergy between architecture, interiors, one holistic approach, almost going back to what I fundamentally believed the reason why I went into architecture was to get that pencil and paper, to put those ideas into a piece of trace, a scrapbook, a sketchbook, and to formulate that with a collective team, a collaboration, working with everyone around me, my team, other teams, to eventually build, deliver and see a physical entity in a space of which you are giving back. It's something that was really kind of my drive that I do. And
I love that because, you know, the iconic designers of the past that you kind of research and learn about when you're in school is, you know, they're the ones who designed the furniture pieces to go within the spaces. And actually, I often think, so, I mean, I studied architecture and then I realised that I wanted to be in more on the interior design side. And now I'm kind of more part of like the furniture side of things. And I think that actually a lot of the time people maybe are listening to this thinking, you know, he really, you know, he knew he wanted to be an architect. However, there's obviously the outside influences that all become part of that. And actually, if you want to become an architect but then actually end up doing something slightly different, that's not like an issue either. And I think that's quite interesting to see that you're influenced by all those things and the people as well.
What I think is actually interesting is also the kind of story of how Melissa came in, because I think there is a problem to being too linear. I mean, I didn't really know that until, but I think the understanding is that architecture is a very broad element. It's very broad, but I think sometimes if you can be too linear, you don't see opportunity, you don't look at alternative perspectives, you know, you actually kind of be a little bit sort of narrow visioned. And I think actually when Melissa sort of brought her, you know, experience and life into an architect, we really kind of expanded into more of a kind of a lifestyle understanding of where architecture can be and where it really needs to be right now.
And because basically I take care of you know, creative development of the brand and internal and external communications. So I am very opposite to Jonathan in the sense that I did not know from very young age what am I going to do exactly. And
that's nice to know.
We were actually very complementary in that sense, because I'm what they would call nowadays a multi-potentialite. So there are people who dive into different careers and then they're able to kind of pull different pieces of experiences and you know, make a different and interesting creative direction out of it. And basically, I'm more of a strategist and I analyze a lot of things that an architect is doing. And I think of basically how can we communicate what we are doing to the broader audience and to the clients as well. So that's kind of, you know, what I'm more doing in the company. But the engine and all of this is based on the passion with which the company is created. So the basis of everything is really love towards the architecture, and that's how the company started. We didn't start a company out of love for business. It was that started out of first Jonathan's passion for architecture, and now the collective team, you know, within an architect, where all the individuals are just obsessed with detail and craftsmanship, and they live architecture, and I'm just there, the non-architect one who is kind of observing.
But I think that's really powerful, though. I think that's really powerful because actually, you know, as we were kind of saying previously in other conversations that we've had, you know, you got to know what it is that you're selling as a product, whether or not that's, you know, a T-shirt in a shop or it's an architectural project or whatever. You've got to understand what, and I think, Jonathan, you were sort of saying it's your craft, and that's what you're able to then promote and tell people about. And I think there's that sort of flip side these days of sort of social media being an incredible tool, but also actually it can become something that people look at without, it's almost like a facade, and actually you really need the substance behind it. And that's where I think it's quite interesting that you're essentially the part where you're selling the substance that's actually already there, because by speaking with Jonathan even for a short time, you can tell that that's his passion, and that's what, you know, the deep-rooted element is of the business, you know.
Yeah, I always say I have an easy job, because the team does amazing projects, and it's kind of easy to work with great projects and people who know exactly what they want to do, but it's really important for everybody starting out now to understand the value of marketing, the value of communication, and presenting everything you do to social media, because that's where your clients are. And you might be the best architect in the world, and if you haven't put that out, how on earth will anybody find you? So I think there is so many great artists, architects, designers, creatives in general, and they're so obsessed with their craft that they somehow don't put enough of energy into just putting this out into the world. And we get actually a lot of inquiries through social media, particularly. People like following our work through social media. We're very much about showing behind the scenes of everything that is happening behind an architect, and we even film sometimes when it's convenient how they do, in meetings, going on sites, making things, discussions, arguments, whatever there is that is really the part of the process. And we find that people love it. They just want to see what is really that craftsmanship about, and how does that passion behind the scenes look like.
Yeah. And to be honest, the real perfectness is the fact that that has been taken care of by a non-architect, someone that's basically been in the luxury industry all her life, traveled the world, speaks multiple languages. But this is the thing, it's actually outside of the architectural sphere. And I think that's where an architect really, works really well as a sort of a family business and a kind of a boutique team, because Militz is constantly looking at this from a sort of a non-architect perspective.
Almost like a client perspective, I guess, then, really.
Yes. Completely. Yeah. And that's actually how the clients really gel to her and talk to her about these things and communicate with her. So we're not, as the architect, focused on getting that perfect image for Instagram. We focus on the architecture. We focus on the craft. We talk about what we're creating and the responsibility and the relevance of that particular project. Militz is sort of like constantly building an understanding about the project as the observer, as the sort of the critique, let's say, and being able to kind of have that, step in, step out, see project progress. So it's this sort of observer, and then being able to kind of understand the value of the energy that's gone into a project, not just that final facade, like you said, that you see on the Instagram shot. There is so much body of energy and thought before that that outshines the value of that particular final image anyway. But it's the story, and it's about the whole idea of understanding that's a valuable part of the architectural process that is often forgotten.
Yeah.
And if you can't attract the next new client, and you can't get that piece of, you can't get that brief that you team get so excited about, that's what we... That's the reason we do it.
Yeah. I mean, I was going to then, I guess, move on to the next question kind of off the back of that, in that, not your finest hour, what challenges have you faced along the way? And would you say that potentially, actually, Jonathan, when you sort of set up the business, actually understanding how to sell yourself, and actually, because obviously you're so into the sort of architectural side of things, that actually that was quite a struggle for you to understand? Or do you think that actually it was sort of almost a positive, really?
There's a certain level of confidence, and you don't know that when you're a young architect, you're absorbing, you're sort of taking in all this information, sometimes a little bit intimidated by all. But I think there's a point of you get this sort of confidence, and once you, like I said before, the shift to Dubai actually almost became me finding what I really believed in, because it had to be black and white. It was Marmite, not. It has to basically for me... This is what I believe in. This is what I believe I want to create. There's an opportunity to create something, but I'm only creating it for me and what I want to do with the people around me and who I want to associate with and what we want to do. So I think in a way there was a certain level of that, but I think you always have to, you face challenges daily. It's never easy, and that is the fight that you go out there to sort of take on.
And do you think that because it's your own business, that maybe that fight is actually almost quite a fun part of it? Because actually I find personally anyway, like, the things that have kind of gone wrong tended to be, I mean, obviously there's the things that really do go wrong and you really wish they'd never gone wrong, but the things that go wrong tend to be the things that you learn the most about, even like when you're thinking about like materials, or from an architectural perspective, or even from like a business development perspective, and actually how you've kind of got to where you are.
It's a good point. I love a challenge. I mean, to be honest, I thrive on a challenge. I mean, this is where I think, every day, and particularly in Dubai, as a base, it's not what we or from. It's not neither of them, it's a nice sort of cultural background, but it is a melting pot. But it's also where you've got to really kind of take that sense of observation, understanding, and then get to know exactly where you fit in, how you can work with what's around you. But generally, you know, the idea of facing a challenge has now become a daily exercise, and that's exactly how what keeps us going. It keeps you on your toes. And in fact, that's what we thrive on.
I think if we're talking about that challenge, I think what is a specific situation with us is that we are a family business, meaning just husband and wife business, and we never had a family background, family inheritance, business developer, anybody else that would influence us or even give us an advice. So we ran the business a lot on common sense and that drive and love towards the craft. So in a way, we went through a lot of grind and a lot of stress. Yeah, I perceive it sometimes more as stress.
This is when Google and YouTube become there, your best friend.
Exactly. And I mean, he's challenged by stressful situations. I'm, for instance, more stressed in stressful situations. So we did go...
I think I'm like, right?
So we do go through a lot of... There was all years and years of grind and difficult situations that in the end make us who we are and build our confidence. But even to anybody starting out now, I think everybody is trying to get this amazing perfect advice of social media, of Google, etc., that will propel them to success. But in the essence, it's about the grind and about the stress and a lot of sleepless nights and a lot of problems that come along your way, and just having that muscle to go through it and then knowing what you've done.
Consistency.
Yeah, it's
consistency, yeah. Is, yeah, one of the key words that I would ever describe. You will have bad times, you will have people against you, you will have things not going your way, but you can't let that distract from what you believe in. And consistency and perseverance and patience are, you know, some of the three key skills and you know, things that I think that me personally have had to grow and understand, and that's where we've taken with the practice. And I think that, like Melissa said, that's essentially where the confidence comes from. You've gone through those hard times, you've persevered. They weren't necessarily some of them as hard as you thought, some of them that you thought were going to be hard became even tougher, but you survived.
Yeah.
And I think exactly as Melissa said, it's trusting common sense. It's really not getting too distracted by exterior influences. Yes, take them on board, process them, and really understand the value of them. And do they relate to you? Are there something that is exactly how you want to pursue? And I think there's a lot of noise, particularly right now. There's a lot of noise going off that's very much distracting. And it is hard to
especially
focus.
Especially at the moment, yeah.
It's hard to focus.
I was going to say at the moment, particularly with like coronavirus and everything, you know, people are on digital platforms probably a lot more than they were. And actually then you see the sort of shiny lives that people live and you don't see the kind of realities of it, kind of like you were saying. And I think almost actually, to be honest, it moves me on to my next question, because I think that off the back of the consistent struggle and, you know, really putting the time and effort in, now that you've got to this point, what's the most notable positive moment? And I think for me personally anyway, that the things that have gone wrong, if you're able to turn them around and make something amazing out of it, or I don't know, just even something that's really difficult and you just really had to put so much effort in, and actually maybe you don't go to the events that you want to go to, or you know, have a really nice picnic in the park or something like that, but actually the end of the day, it feels so much better when you then win, you know.
I think one of the most important things that we're at now is having this studio of really competent, passionate individuals that are completely independent and capable of doing all the jobs that come our way. And that sounds like, oh well, that's a common sense, but that's the hardest part in business, because those are things we didn't know and we're not able to that easily assess at the beginning. Like, who are we bringing to the team? Who are we employing? There are people who can look perfect on their CV, but just are not fitting very well into an architect culture. And now when we look at it, we have this amazing studio of people, and it makes us feel confident and proud. And I think that's an achievement in itself.
Yeah, I was going to say, is there any particular projects that really stand out to you? Because for me, obviously, I know of you guys, and I'm just sort of saying it for the people who are listening, that, you know, craftsmanship, number one, is clear. For me, I love the architectural detailing and the real sort of simplistic minimalism that you have, that kind of really exudes luxury, but almost in a non sort of over detailed way. And I mean, hopefully I'm describing it in a sort of way that you would. But is there anything particular that stands out to you in terms of projects or anything that you've kind of produced along the way that really stands out to you?
Yeah, I mean, it's very much post-opulent anyway. And I think that, like we sort of said, I mean, it's things that are relevant. It's projects that really have a purpose is what really kind of matters to us. So to be honest, I think one of the projects that people might have seen that we are quite proud of is the Al-Fayer Desert Retreat and Spa in Sharjah. And, you know, the reason for that particular project was that these buildings were redundant, built in the 1960s. They were redundant for about 40 years. They're in the middle of the desert, but it's a prehistoric sort of UNESCO heritage site area, the foot of a beautiful mountain range, very kind of remote, but still only within about an hour drive away from both Dubai and Sharjah, so it's easily accessible. But people weren't going out there, particularly people that maybe were not from the region. You know, people, even like the expatriates in the UAE, were not going out there as such, or it was an undiscovered territory, but it was so valuable because essentially it is the inherent nature of the UAE, it's desert. You know, just like, you know, the Pennines and Derbyshire and the part of the UK for me, that the greenery and the rolling hills. But it's also about that sense
of... Yeah, you're not going on a bike ride around there.
Well, I did. I ran on there.
But you did? No way.
Yeah. But yeah, but I think the great thing is about trying to understand its context first and knowing that whatever you're doing with that project, you're bringing something back to life. And if you're bringing it back to life from a redundant, you're not destroying, demolishing, building fresh. You're actually using layers of history, layers of culture, layers of sort of intrigue. And how do you carefully bring that back to life, both with architectural detailing, with materiality, but also program? So it was about creating a connection with that piece of land, that location in the desert, and drawing people out there. With this particular project, because it was quite an unusual project for what people would perceive internationally as well, what's happening in the UAE, it picked up immensely, went global in regards to the interest from a kind of a publication perspective, which obviously working and Millet's have been able to kind of understand the value of what that project was. I had a great opportunity to work with my favourite architecture photographer, Fernando Guerra from Lisbon.
Oh wow, no way.
Yeah, and he was great, but the 2 days that we spent there shooting were phenomenal for us because it was a point where you can really appreciate the architecture and all the energy that's gone into it from the full team and sort of absorb it.
Yeah, because you never stand back and look at what you've done.
No.
I mean, I'm awful at that. Like, for me, even developing like a podcast series, I've kind of almost forgotten about the fact that I did series one and, you know, all the events or projects that I've worked on and things, because I'm always I think it's quite a good thing in a way that you're kind of always fighting for the next thing. But often I think one thing that I've learned that I really should do more of, particularly during this year, I think actually, like with coronavirus, is that standing back, reflecting and almost realigning yourself is actually and learning from the projects that you've done or the things that you've done and actually standing back and looking at taking photographs of a project and actually then being able to promote them to people. I think that's almost a really nice thing about social media, that you can almost reflect on what you've done. I think
it's critically important that you reflect on your successes in any career that you're in. You need to remember all these little steps that brought you to where you are. And even if we're talking about some positive moments of the company, yes, we were published in all these big publications and zines and wallpaper and Architectural Digest and How to Spend It and all that. And we kind of forget that. We move on to the next big thing. But it's so important to, as you said, scroll down a little bit down your Instagram and maybe have a look at where you've been and where you've been published and all these finished projects that people are now using, and they live in these houses or they use these hotels. I think that's extremely important, and it's fueling for you further to make new, better things.
Yeah.
I mean, I think also, I'm a bit old school in a way. Like, I really just like seeing people in space that you've designed and worked on and put the ideas, because it's almost like a hypothesis, is that you kind of, almost in a kind of a spatial psychology, think about people, how they might use space, how they might react to the orientation. You know, we really look at passive design approach.
Oh, I love that.
Because we work in multiple different contexts, from sort of tropical to desert to mountainous. And I think it's really about understanding a place. And the whole role of the building has a purpose. The whole role of the architecture should connect with the landscape and its occupants. And I think, to be honest, I'm so sort of I suppose you get excited about when you see people using it. But what's also quite interesting is then through the kind of social media shift is actually seeing how then people photograph them. Because obviously it's people see moments. And I think sometimes in our project, I hide moments that I maybe don't think that people might discover, then suddenly someone might discover it. You know, that's a really kind of like nice playful way in which you can do these things. I mean, I think another proud moment for us was actually with Wallpaper Magazine inviting us to be part of their 10th anniversary handmade exhibition.
Oh, wow.
And for me...
Wait, was that the... Milan Design Week. That in Milan. Is that the same one?
Yes.
Yeah. It was last year. So it was great because
I went to see that.
I constantly follow from day one with handmade and found it was a fantastic initiative. But to be honest, it was this this resonance with an architect, like we said, it's where architecture translates across scale, across different functions. So we essentially created door handles that were actually so crafted and so specific and engaging. And that was what the part of that particular thing was. But, you know, it also shows where architecture can diverse and really work in these different ways. So, you know, like Melissa said, I think there's been a lot of successes, and I think it's important that you kind of do appreciate them and reflect and understand, you know, the value of those and give it credit to sort of propel you forward and keep level-headed about it, I think, and very just remain humble the right way.
I think it moves me on to my next question, which is then what, which I think for me it stands out quite a lot in that actually it's about kind of, so myself looking at you, you've achieved so much and I would love to be where you are, and I'm sure a lot of people listening would be as well. But then actually I love that you are also then thinking about what's next for yourself, and I love that kind of synergy when, you know, I'm talking to somebody like yourself, but actually you're obviously looking at people, inspired by people, like learning from the projects that you've worked on. You've got aspirations for the future, and I'd love to kind of hear a little bit about what your ideas are really for the future of your business and kind of how you keep moving forward, and, you know, whether or not actually sometimes you want to just stand still and look at it and just, you know, realign yourself a bit.
Well, I think if we're talking about the business, we would love to have, you know, an architect strengthening an architect brand and company identity and associating it with lifestyle architecture as the result of these diverse projects we've done in different contexts working in different locations. So I think we are not, if I'm talking about the brand, I think we're not even nearly there. Like, I feel like there is so much more.
Mm. I love that you call it a brand as well. I think that's what's really exciting these days is that, okay, it's an architectural practice and that's your product, but you think about it from a whole context of how your website represents your design style, or, you know, all of these
very
things.
Much. I think that's what people nowadays are looking also at, what are the brand values. And if our clients are wanting to know what are an architect's brand values, because they kind of associate their values with companies they work with, right? So for us, the understanding of what is an architect as a brand and what is the culture and what are the values of that culture are very important. And I think particularly younger generation want to know every service and every product nowadays people are using, they want to know what is behind that brand and their values. So we don't take that lightly at all. And so for me, it's just really strengthening that whole idea and expanding even more globally. But that's more of a brand and business side, but I think Jonathan has much.
I think it's so exciting though. I think these days it like really ties in, because I think what I love is that Jonathan was saying that architecture, you know, it's okay as architecture is a building if you really think about it, but actually in the general, I mean, I remember when I was studying, I remember researching like science and psychology, and like you're looking at the indoor and outdoor spaces or materials, and you can go into so many different things that actually sometimes you can become, I mean, I think I had that myself, where you become so overwhelmed by all the options available to you. And I think that's quite an issue for a lot of people these days, when it almost is on a bit of a plate in front of you in terms of books or things you can read, or you can access information all the time. But actually, I love that you have like an idea of who you are as a brand rather than we're an architectural company, because I think knowing that and understanding that about what it is that you're offering, I think is really powerful and actually a very important thing.
I think just to add to that, I think everyone starting out right now, whether they're an architecture company, a graphic designer, and anyone, they should think about what is their brand and the values of that brand. because I don't see how can you do it otherwise. Like, you really need to understand how
differentiate
yourself from all these other people on the market.
Yeah, it's understanding your niche and what you're passionate about and what you can contribute, and that sort of starts to define your brand, because as we said before, it's about, you know, attracting those clients, attracting those projects, those briefs, those locations that you are interested in, that you can add value to. We've gained experience and we've gained trust in ourselves as a company and our team that we feel comfortable with that challenge of working in these different contexts. In fact, actually, that's where we thrive. This is part of the an architect DNA. It's about working in these very interesting contexts. And I think what's also really kind of exciting for us, and where we do kind of continue, is this sort of global local approach. And that's become idea of really understanding the local context, the local materials, the local culture, exactly where we're working. We need to know that microclimate, or that slightly wider microclimate, on what we're doing. But we are not from that region. We are not from that place. So what do we bring outside that's relevant, specific, and actually adds another layer to that locality that creates this sort of progression in their own micro location? And I think, you know, we established London, but I think for moving forward, we want to grow the London team bigger and stronger. And I think the uniqueness is also about the idea that, well, we both met in London. I lived there for 8 years after moving down. We studied, we worked, but we also view, but it's crazy, but we've been in Dubai over a decade now. But the reality is, with our London studio, we see it as inherently knowing London inside out, and we see it as external.
Yeah.
So there is a complete duality which we feel adds a value in this sort of critical approach to our project. And that's what keeps us on our toes. So
I think that's a really powerful thing. I think that's really powerful. I mean, all I was going to say to add to that was that I actually find, and this is kind of stepping back slightly, that I find having a group of friends or people in the industry that you know who are from different backgrounds, they're different ages, they're different ethnicities, genders, everything. I just feel like even sitting down at a dinner table with a group of people who are all from different backgrounds is so exciting, because you learn about language, you learn about what they had for breakfast in the mornings when they were children, or I don't know, and you think actually all of those things impact massively. And I think that's why I actually really love London, is that there is a bit of a melting pot of people from different places, and I think that's quite exciting, kind of what you were saying there.
Well, it's almost like that's how we try to translate our practice.
Yeah.
Basically, that's what Dubai offered to us in a sense of as a hub, and that's what we knew from London, but we didn't know the value of that in London until we left London.
Yeah, it's so funny, isn't it?
Living. So then you come back and you know it, you know, and we know both these cities inherently very well and what their values are. But the great thing about London is obviously it also reaches into new markets in Europe. You know, we're exploring Southeast Europe now, so the Balkans and around, you know, sort of Serbia, Montenegro, things that are really unique contexts again to this part of the world, in the same way in which the Dubai studio gives access into Asia and to Africa. And I think it just keeps us on our toes. And like we said, facing those challenges is what keeps us kind of alive.
Yeah.
And really what sort of like fuels the passion in the team to really push the architecture and make sure that what we deliver is relevant, and it's something that's exciting for
and
our
something
clients,
you're proud
for
of
people
as well.
To enjoy. Yeah, it's certainly something that comes through is what we love doing.
Oh, it's so exciting. I love it when you hear from people who are like really truly passionate about what you do, and I love that you're a husband and wife team, and that actually you both have your strength and you both know kind of how to, you know, for example, drive the craft, understand what you're doing, understand the context and all of that, but then also actually understand that there's a brand there and that you have to represent the sort of character of it in the right way by getting it into the right types of magazines, putting the right images out there, because it is exactly, that's what's speaking to your clients. And I guess moving on from that as sort of a final point, as a question, which I'm actually quite sad about, because I feel like I could have spoken to you guys for so long, just more about how you kind of built your business and things. But when you look back, what's the best piece of advice that you've received? And to be honest, off the back of that, it could be more actually a mantra that you live by, or even just in business. You know, sometimes you just have to sit back and tell yourself to do something. And it'd be really interesting to know from both of you, actually, what your life mantra is, I guess.
Sure, I don't know if this is my life mantra, but I'll tell you one piece of advice that was a bad piece of advice that I
got. Oh, okay, no one's done this before. That's quite good.
Prior to working at an architect, I was working for a luxury brand and in their marketing department, and I was asking to move into different sector within. And the advice that my superior gave me was, if you really want to be successful, you need to stick to one thing only and become a professional and expert in that one field, and that's how you success in your get a you know
yeah.
move forward in your career. And that's not at all fitting my personality or my life path. And I've done many things prior, and I, you know, graduated from LSE and then worked for a multinational brand, and now I'm in an architecture practice, and all these things are slightly different. But all of these layers are now so valuable to create a unique story and unique direction for an architect, for instance. And I find that dipping into all these different careers, they're not extremely different, but they're certainly not a very linear life path, for instance, that Jonathan had, made you know, an architect a little bit that bit stronger and more interesting. And I think that advice of you need to stick to one thing only and do nothing else is a little bit outdated and not fitting the current generation that has everything at their fingertips and is super curious. And I think we just need to pay attention to what kind of advice are we getting and are they relevant for our times.
That's so powerful, actually. I've never even thought of it from actually thinking about a bad piece of advice. That's so helpful. No pressure, Jonathan.
Well, yeah, I think for me, it's a little bit of hindsight and actually giving value to the lessons that you've learned.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily maybe just one piece of advice, but I certainly do believe that you know, a practice that I worked for when I came out of the Bartlett, sort of my, you know, after I'd done my 5 years of study, they really threw me in the deep end, and they made me kind of understand the sort of being accountable for your work, being understanding about the responsibility you were having to deliver, and that level of trust. And that did certainly influence the way in which we actually engage with all of our team. You know, each one is an individual strength. They have their skills and they have responsibilities, because that's what's great architects. And I think in a way, you know, looking back of the impact of what that had on me at that time, I didn't quite know it in the moment, but certainly it made a profound effect on me further on in my career. The same thing with the Bartlett, which is purely about hard work. I mean, looking outside, challenging yourself, and you know, I was always obsessed about things and outside of, you know, architecture being sort of, you know, the psychology of space.
Oh my God, I love that.
Daylighting and so forth, that James Turrell, all sorts of understanding about art influence in architecture, and that's become a bit of a mantra for an architect. We really look at the sort of the connections in relation to place, you know, landscape, architecture, into interiors to exteriors, and also the way light influences. So it's my mantra is passion. I'm not going to deny that. I'm motivated and I really love what I do, and I love working with the team, and I love what we can do, and we're very privileged to be able to do that. But I think
you say you're privileged to do that, but I actually think that maybe you are, but in a way, actually, you've clearly worked incredibly hard to kind of get to that point. And I think that is, you know, something that a lot of people don't really remember. You know, they say they're privileged to be at this point, but you know, your business would not be your business if it wasn't you two who'd built it.
The advice I give is just having an open mind to opportunity. And I think it's about what we mentioned before, it's consistency. I think consistency is key, and it's a strange thing that no one really necessarily talks about too much. But, you know, really committing and really actually having that sense of consistency to deliver what you want to do and keep pushing.
The sounds of things, being a mentor as well. Oh, yes. Yeah,
I
go ahead.
One more to throw everything off.
Just throw a few
the advice I would give is be wary of the advices you're receiving, in sense that most likely you already know what you need to do, you're just not doing it. Because it's 2020, everything is at the fingertips on Google. You just need to ask a question and you'll get probably 50 articles on how do I run a business, how do I run a marketing campaign, how do I do this, how do I follow. You will find everything. You're probably just not doing it. And I fear that a lot of young people nowadays are spending more time looking for advices and these magic pills and big breakthroughs rather than just doing the things or ask questions, do the things you probably know you need to do it, but it's just not high enough on your priority list. And I'm saying this from own experience, because even if I'm talking about business side of an architect, I see a lot of things more we can do, and it's not done yet. Not because we don't know how to do it. It's just we didn't do it yet.
Yeah, I think everyone's searching for a bit of a quick fix, aren't they, with most things? And I think
there is no quick fix. You know, no way. It's all about the guy.
No, it's so, so true. I mean, even for me with If Not Now Then When, you know, I can't believe that I've been doing it now for like almost 4 years. Time has kind of flown by, really. And I'm very excited to see the development of your company and your brand. And I really, really enjoy speaking with you both today. And I can't wait to kind of, this is one thing that I love about the podcast, is that I really want to catch up with each and every person that I've spoken to, like a year on or obviously beforehand, but just to kind of see where they've gone to and, you know, whether or not the then what question is reflective. But thank you so much. Mm-hmm.
Thank you so, so much. It was a pleasure. I feel this could have gone for another hour.
No, thanks a lot. It's been a real pleasure to chat. And actually, it's quite nice to be able to talk about our experiences and share some insights. Yeah. It's a good opportunity.
Yeah. Fantastic.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thanks so much to the amazing Jonathan and Melissa of An Architect. Their story is one that highlights the importance of taking every opportunity that comes your way. I also love the focus on knowing and understanding your craft and what makes you different, along with the ways in which you can market this and then share it with the world, and the best ways to gain traction for your business. The combination of both passion for design and business advice has made this an episode that I'm so excited to share with you all. For more information about An Architect, visit their website, which is anarchitect.com, and their Instagram, which is anarchitect_co. The podcasts in this series are every 2 weeks, so to keep up to date and to gain access to the toolkit, please feel free to register for updates via the website, which is inntw.co.uk. Finally, thanks again to Unicat Music for transforming this podcast with their track Cosmos. It wouldn't be the same without you. If you'd like to hear more from them, visit their Instagram, which is unicat.music, or you can listen to them on Spotify. A massive thank you to Minotti London. This series would not have been possible without your support, and obviously to you guys for listening. Thank you.